From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. Breaking news today as a D.C. Circuit Court rules in a case involving former President Donald Trump. And this Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court will be hearing arguments over whether Trump was part of an insurrection on January 6, 2021, and if his name can be taken off the Colorado primary ballot. Now, you can hear those arguments live on Boise State Public Radio Thursday morning. They'll begin at 8 a.m. Now, the former president is also facing a bill for more than $83 million after a judge and jury decided he had defamed E. Jean Carroll after calling her a liar for accusing him of sexual assault. And the Constitution is also in the spotlight as the fight between the federal government and the state of Texas heats up over control of the nation's border with Mexico. So here today to help us break all of these topics down is Dr. David Adler, the president of the Alturas Institute. He'll be listening to Thursday's arguments and then hosting one of his constitutional conversations that evening at the Yonke Center in Boise. Dr. Adler, good to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much, Gemma. Always nice to be with you.
So let's start with this breaking news this morning. Now, here's the headline just a few hours ago from NPR, quote, "Federal appeals court rules Trump doesn't have broad immunity from prosecution," unquote. Can you remind us of this case, Dr. Adler, and what this ruling means?
Well, this is a historic case in every way, shape, and form, Gemma. This is the case in which the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals is hearing former President Donald Trump's argument that a president is immune from criminal prosecution. And this is the case in which Donald Trump claimed absolute immunity for any actions that he might have taken as president from criminal prosecution. And if he had, in fact, prevailed, which he did not, that would have placed the president of the United States above the law, certainly offensive to every aspect of the rule of law and American constitutionalism, and indeed our constitutional democracy. So the net effect of this ruling is, in fact, an absolute rejection of Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity. It preserves the rule of law and our democracy, and frankly, it gives our democracy and the rule of law a chance to continue. We now await the question of whether the Supreme Court of the United States, based on the presumed appeal from Donald Trump, will take the case or simply turn it back to the federal district judge, Judge Chutkan, and a trial originally scheduled for March 4th could proceed at a later date, perhaps at the end of April or so. So, Gemma, in every way, this is a historic decision, because if the court had ruled in favor of Donald Trump, then he would have been able to make good on his claim, as he said so many times, that he could order SEAL Team 6 to kill political opponents. He could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue in New York, and he could never be held accountable. The claim, always preposterous, nevertheless, was quite frightening, quite chilling, because of Donald Trump's claims on the campaign trail that, among other things, he would be a dictator for a day, and that he would terminate the Constitution, and that the president enjoys absolute power under the Constitution. So that's what gave great concerns and great fright to those who heard Trump claim absolute immunity.
Mm-hmm. So bottom line on this, Dr. Adler, is that the court is saying, no, you do not have absolute immunity. However, he will likely appeal this decision.
That's right. So exactly right, Gemma. The court rejected Trump's claim of absolute immunity, said that the president is accountable to the law, as are all other citizens, that he has to be held accountable for any of his actions involving his effort to unlawfully overturn the 2020 election. If, in fact, the allegations are proved, the court said, it would represent an unprecedented assault on our constitutional structure. That's quite strong language from the appellate court, which was unanimous, of course, in the opinion, to say of a former president's actions, your actions, if true, represent an unprecedented assault on our constitutional structure, represents the gravest possible criminal act against our constitutional democracy. And now, of course, Donald Trump is expected to appeal this decision to the Supreme Court of the United States. And the Federal Court of Appeals gave him until Monday, next Monday, roughly a week, to lodge that appeal. If he doesn't file that appeal, then the appellate court said, we're sending this case back to the federal district judge under the jurisdiction of federal judge Chutkan, and she can proceed with the case. So that means, obviously, that Trump is going to appeal to the Supreme Court. And that raises the great question, Gemma, of what the court will do. Will it agree to take the case? If it takes the case, does it set oral argument to be heard expeditiously? Does it render a decision quickly so as to not undermine the ability to hold a trial, to hold Trump accountable at a trial before the election? Or does the court essentially take its time, perhaps precluding the opportunity to ever hold a trial and ever hold Donald Trump accountable? Or, Gemma, and this is what I hope and a lot of legal scholars across the country believe, the court will not take the case because this 67-page opinion is so closely argued, well argued, filled with citations to the Constitution, to the law, and delivered by three highly respected appellate court judges. The court may just say Trump's claim was ludicrous to begin with. The president is not above the law, and we will not hear the case and send it back to the federal district judge, and she will proceed with trial.
We'll get back to the former president in a minute, but I do want to jump to Sunday for a moment, Dr. Adler. When our governor, Brad Little, was in Texas with 13 other governors to support Texas Governor Greg Abbott in his fight over the border, can you tell us what's happening there and what is the constitutional argument?
Sure. Thank you. The reality here is that this is an argument between Texas Governor Abbott and the federal government over who has responsibility for protecting the border. The reality is, under the Constitution, that falls to the authority of the federal government. It's very clear. The argument by the state of Texas, however, is that under the Constitution, the state has the authority to protect itself in the case of invasion. And so Governor Abbott is claiming that the illegal crossings represent a quote-unquote invasion, justifying his decision to call out the Texas National Guard and to enlarge the Texas presence at the border. The Supreme Court has reiterated this is this falls within the province of federal authority, and the Texas governor is required to remove the razor wire that he installed on the banks of the Rio Grande and to remove the deadly mechanisms within the river itself that are menacing and can kill those attempting to cross the river. But we have, interestingly, a standoff. And other governors now, including the Idaho governor, Brad Little, as you pointed out, have joined forces with Governor Abbott of Texas and said that they believe that the governor has the authority to protect the quote-unquote sovereignty of the state of Texas. And so what we have here is something of a standoff, even though the Constitution clearly grants the authority to the federal government. This won't be the last turn of events because, in fact, Governor Abbott can make political hay out of the border issue, much like other members of his Republican Party are attempting to utilize the chaos at the border as political weapon number one in the general election ahead, and as a way of beating up on President Biden.
So I want to now talk about what's going to be happening this Thursday, Dr. Adler, and that is Supreme Court arguments. This has to do with a case in Colorado concerning former President Trump. So what is Colorado saying? And what about Trump? What is he arguing?
Well, this is a fascinating case. This involves the effort by the state of Colorado to invoke Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, known as the Insurrection Clause, or sometimes as the Disqualification Clause, that would prohibit somebody's name from appearing on a ballot who is an officer of the United States and who took an oath to support, defend the Constitution, and then engaged in an insurrection or rebellion, or otherwise aided or abetted the rebellion. The state of Colorado determined, first of all, in the state district court, that Donald Trump had indeed met the criteria of supporting, aiding, and abetting an insurrection on January 6, 2021, when the effort was undertaken to stop the solemn constitutional fulfillment of Congress under the Constitution to certify the Electoral College ballots, which would have represented, of course, the peaceful transfer of power from former President Donald Trump to Joe Biden, who was the lawful victor. And so the District Court in Colorado made that finding. And so then that meant that the case was on to the Colorado Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court held that the state could proceed to prevent Trump's name from appearing on the ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. President Trump, or former President Trump, however, argues that under that section, he is not an officer of the federal government, that that clause applies to other officers, not the president and the vice president, and that in any case, the state could not keep a candidate for the presidency off the ballot. Many people, many scholars, attorneys, and others have weighed in on this issue, but it strikes me, Gemma, as being one of those cases where the evidence is so strongly supportive of the position of the state of Colorado, because there's abundant evidence that President Trump engaged in efforts to foment and to organize and to strike the match, as Liz Cheney likes to say, that led to the insurrection at the Capitol, so that he meets those criteria. Now, thus I would say, along with the state of Colorado, that in fact, Section 3 is applicable, should be invoked as it has been, which would disqualify him. Now, this is an explosive issue, as we all realize. The idea of keeping a presidential candidate, and indeed the front runner for the GOP nomination, off the ballot is as explosive an issue politically as you can find. And so when the Supreme Court hears those oral arguments on Thursday, the great question is, first of all, does the court want to entertain arguments which would bring it center stage in a way that it's never been center stage in making decisions governing presidential elections, save for the 2000 election, Bush versus Gore, and place it at the center, perhaps, of denying the opportunity for former President Trump to be a candidate? Does it want the institution of the Supreme Court to play a role? Or B, does it consider itself as a law court, possessing the chief responsibility to say what the law is? And if that is its perceived duty, and I think it should certainly do that, particularly this court, which has said for years that its approach to understanding the Constitution is to look at the text and the legislative history when the text was written, and apply that irrespective of politics, which would lead a majority of the court then to, I think, apply Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and disqualify Donald Trump. But there are exit ramps, Gemma, for the Supreme Court if it chooses not to want to enforce the ruling, as many predict, because the court would find itself in a precarious position, knowing that whatever it rules, half the country roughly is going to be angry. The other half will be relatively pleased. So this is a question of great moment, but if the court is true to its constitutional approach, then it really should uphold Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, because it was designed to prevent people from running for office who had previously taken an oath to support, protect, and defend the Constitution, and then engaged in various ways to subvert it through aiding and abetting or engaging in an insurrection. And of course, I think that's what Donald Trump clearly did on January 6th of 2021.
So, Dr. Adler, before I let you go, last question. In your opinion, are these cases against Trump, as some have said, interfering with the election process?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question, Gemma, because it's been widely discussed and debated around the country. I think for the thing for us to remember is that we have a constitutional democracy, which means the rule of law is baked into our democratic system. The judicial system is part of our democracy. Certainly the rule of law is a major part of our democracy. So if we allow those factors to play their usual weight and we grant respect to the Constitution, the rule of law, and the judicial process, then we can't reach the conclusion that the implementation or the utilization of these key principles and pillars of our constitutional system are at play. We can't reach the decision that it constitutes election interference. We should say that the rule of law should always be at play. The Constitution should never be suspended. The judicial process should not be suspended. Politics or political races, campaigns have to work their way around, in between, we might say, the application of the principles of the rule of law and the Constitution. So in sum, no, it's not an election interference. It's the practice of giving vent to our constitutional system, which has well served us for over 200 years and cannot be suspended or sidelined simply to please or to placate the interest of particular candidates for office, no matter how high that office is.
Well, as always, Dr. Adler, so appreciate your perspective on all of this and appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Gemma. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.